I'm Isander.
And I'm Coda.
And if you are a fan of the Emperor, this will not be an episode for you. It's going to be rough on Big E, but it's fine. It's not his episode. He'll get his at some point, but it's not his today.
I thought this was going to be an episode on the world leaders, not anti-imperial propaganda.
They go hand in hand. Because the world leaders are kind of his biggest failing, I would argue.
It does look... It does seem... You know how you describe the city of Paradise, Las Vegas, as God was creating the earth and he blinked?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
then
yeah,
he
yeah.
opened his eyes and continued
I've,
on?
I've always maintained that Vegas feels like God was creating the earth and his hand was moving. And then right when we got over Las Vegas, he blinked for just a second. And then his hand kept on moving. And that's how Vegas came to be.
The world leaders seem like one of those legions where the emperor blinked.
Yeah. I would say blinked, but you'll see later on there's a lot of signs. He had to have had his eyes closed and ears shut for just going la 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 every time they're around to miss this coming.
So he didn't care.
this one feels like the most outright uncaring the emperor has been. So it's going to be fairly rough on him. They're also possibly the legion with the most unrealized potential. They are a legion that straight up might not exist anymore and do not serve their Primarch. Straight up.
As we talked about in the Patreon video, they're war bands, or at least
don't serve their Primarch. They may not be related to him anymore in mass. Yeah, it gets really funky with them. And despite all of that, they're still one of the most popular legions out there. I mean, you don't even have to be in 40K to have heard Blood for the Blood God, Skulls for the Skull Throne, Milk for the Cornflakes. You know how this song and dance goes. They are so popular and also probably your dad's favorite legion.
I mean, all you would have had to do is watch a single Badger video.
Yeah, I love Badger.
And then... You would have heard it.
Yeah, no.
You would have gotten it.
They're very metal. They're very cool. And they are the World Eaters.
Get me the flamer. The heavy flamer.
Those guys come later. Those guys will be a different episode. Okay. They're fun. But before we get into that, we do have a Patreon where you can get twice as many episodes. This week we covered Karn, as well as access to the Discord, access to Community Day live streams, which one should be happening today, as well as a bunch of other perks, all while helping support us and keep the lights on over here. So if you want access to all of that and the bonus episode, make sure you head on over to patreon.com/IsanderandCoda. Also, be sure to cast your votes, because we're now down to the Death Guard and the High Lords. It's up to you at this point.
I honestly...
It's 50-50. Well, it's not a 50-50. Let me just cheat right now. It's not a 50-50. One group has a definite lead. I won't say who, but...
I would rather the Death Guard than the old...
Don't put
crews.
Your finger on the scale. Stop cheating. Oh. Let them decide. Oh. They have the power. Oh. Not you. Oh. No. Yeah.
No, I'm sad. You made me sad.
Is what it is. Now let's get on to the World Eaters. We will start with not their stepfather per se, but the father that stepped up. Korn, otherwise known as Special K, the Blood God, the Great Cornholio, Cornelius Fudge, and Rage Incarnate. He is the god of murder, destruction, rage, murder, battle, barbarism, murder, combat, honor, honesty, and murder. That is his whole domain, start to finish. And he is, if you can't tell by what gives him worship, one of the biggest winners in 40K. If not, possibly the... This one's debated, but there's a very good chance at a baseline, Korn might be the strongest thing out there.
I mean, think of it. He is the chaos god of war and carnage, and this is a game and an IP where it's in the name.
Well, it's also in the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war. And what feeds Korn, baby? Everyone. Some degree, even the most argent, most just perfect follower in the Imperium, even Gilliman indirectly feeds him. Because every now and then, Gilliman will need to punch something hard enough to turn it into red mist. And Korn loves that. He is also very, very easy to understand. Because it's Blood for the Blood God.
It's simple.
Skulls for the Skull Throne. Get out there and collect.
It is quite shrimple.
But do that. Did you say shrimple?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to go collect, do so regularly, fairly, and honestly. He does ask for that. He doesn't want you to collect the skulls from behind or when they're not looking. No, look them in the eye and take their skull. Because you're that guy.
I thought he was one who just didn't give a care. Just go get the skulls.
No, he kind of cares. He would like it. Get them with your own two hands.
He does prefer it a certain way.
Get them up close and personal. He's very might makes right. And so if you weren't mighty enough to get that skull. Sorry. He does value a bit of cunning, you know. He doesn't say run in there head first. Because this is something that gets washed away with Khorne and the World Eaters too. It's not just run forward. There's a lot of that.
There is a lot of that, I was going to say.
But he does appreciate a little bit of cunning, you know. Not the full, I will spend 10 years planning out every single facet of this campaign like some other people are. I won't name names. But he does like it if it's, you know, you don't have to fight the whole Titan at once. You can go limb by limb by limb by limb. And that's acceptable, you know? That's a good level of cunning.
To fight the whole...
You think I'm joking, but there is a story of a regular World Eater going from one leg of a Titan up to its head and massacring everyone inside.
That's kind of awesome.
They're so cool. That's kind of awesome. Oh my God, they're so cool. And it's a pretty sweet deal. It's a very solid set of virtues. If you forget the whole rip them apart with your bare hands, grab their skulls kind of a thing. Like if you ignore that part of it, the whole just whatever you do, do it fairly, honestly, and upfront, and always just be doing it. It's a pretty sweet deal.
It's a good deal.
Who wouldn't want to be a little bit... Being Khorne's not that bad, you know? You're independent, you're honorable, you're fair, and you're strong. I've never seen a Khorne follower who didn't go to the gym every damn day.
And your Chaos God is not going to be perpetually lying to you all 100% of the time.
Khorne will never lie to you.
He will tell you exactly what he wants out of you. He will tell you exactly how he feels. He is completely 100% honest.
Yes, yes. And this will come to this later. This leads to him being actually really active in his followers' lives. In a way, not many Chaos... Okay. Tzeentch might be more active, but not in a good way. Tzeentch might be more active, but not in a good way. Khorne is... He takes a direct hand in his followers' lives, and I do like that about them. I mentioned him in the beginning because from the get-go, the World Eaters were kind of Khorne-adjacent, man. It was real obvious. This is the part where... Well, you'll see, but it was really easy for the Emperor to have seen this coming. When he was creating every legion, it's because he's a workaholic. You know how this song and dance goes, but he can't be everywhere at once.
Yeah.
He can solve any problem he looks at directly. The problem is...
He only has two eyes.
He can't look everywhere all at once, you know? So he created 20 sons and then 20-ish sons, and then 20 legions that take after the sons. And it's basically just him... They're supposed to be a decent stand-in for him whenever something needs to get done. And they usually are a facet of him, magnified, right? So last week's episode was Magnus. He is the Emperor's psychic might. All the Primarchs are kind of magic. Nobody is as magic as Magni Magic.
He's very, very magic.
He's so magical we don't know his actual canon height. Which sounds stupid until you remember 40K nerds really care about height for some reason. It's specific. We know the height of almost every character in the setting that matters, so much so that if your height is told in a book, you'll live through the whole thing.
How tall is Lion?
Guaranteed. Oh, I don't know them off the top of my head. Oh. I don't care very much, but he's on the taller end. I'd say average. Average for Primarch, tall for everything else.
Yeah.
But he's
me. He just like me, for real, for real.
Yeah, you're like average for Denmark, but tall for everywhere else.
Average for here, honestly.
You're average for... Because the average there is like 6'1", 6'2", and you are like 6'1", 6'2".
I can look most people Norway. Here in the eye.
No, you cannot. I'll tell you that for free right now.
I don't know. Maybe I have a complex.
You definitely do. But that's neither here nor there. What matters is Magnus is so magic... We don't even know his actual height. He could just change it whenever he wanted, which, very funny. Very funny ability to have.
He's like Drake in the music video for First Person Shooter.
That's so specific. No one's going to get that. I will...
He is not 6'2".
Give you so many bonus points. Leave him alone. I will give you so many bonus points if you can figure out what aspect Angron and the World Eaters are meant to represent in the Emperor. Don't guess yet, because you'll get it wrong.
Well, his name is Angron, so I assume it's anger.
No.
Oh.
Oh. You'll get another chance later, but it's not anger. When he was starting recruiting, you could kind of see which way the Legion was going to go based on what he was looking for when looking for new Legionnaires. With the Thousand Sons, he was looking for Psykers. Plain and simple. Everywhere he found them, he just grabbed them. With the World Eaters specifically, he was looking for some of the most competitive combatants he could find. Just some of the most aggressive, I must be at the front and I must do it to the best of my abilities people he could find. And it showed up because even from the beginning, after they came out of the vats, they would win battles in hours.
Hours.
Mm-hmm.
Hours.
Mm-hmm.
Not days, not weeks, not months. Hours. Hours.
Yeah. Now, they weren't the fastest because other legions would plan it out and then knock it out quicker. Like if we're talking boots on the ground time. There were other faster legions, but if we're talking the whole campaign from planning to action, oh, the World Eaters did it faster every single time.
Because they just went down and then kill.
They are brutal shock troops, and they would suffer horrific losses because of this, but hey, they would win every single time. So that's what they are off doing. We have to jump cut to where Angron landed for a little bit, because his upbringing affects his legion so much more than most Primarchs do. The concept of generational trauma is something these guys deal with. It's not... The sins of the father hard appear in all of their sons. All of them. So he landed...
Just hearing this, I would debate that because I know enough about Angron to know this isn't exactly a sin of his. He seems to have fallen into this position.
Yes, but the whole thing about the sins of the father is the kid didn't ask for dad to come home and beat the brakes off of him because he didn't know how to talk to him. That just happened to him.
Yeah, fair.
And that's how he learned to interact with kids.
Fair enough.
You know? That's what it is. Angron didn't ask to land on this planet, but he did. And the first thing he encountered were Eldar, who basically took one look at him and went, Oh my god, you can't be allowed to live. Whoa, what did we just stumble upon? And they immediately just tried to kill an infant outright, which when he was found, they were all dead around him. So, very powerful. I wonder what they saw in Angron's future that made them want to punt a baby. Will it come up later? I don't know. Let's find out. He was found by some people on this planet called Nusaria. And it's not a bad planet per se. It's a horrifically unequal planet. It's one of those places where if you're rich, it's fantastic. And if you're poor, it sucks.
This is a planet where the middle class has died.
There's no middle class. Yes, the death of the middle class happened hard. There are just the very impoverished in one corner and the turbo wealthy. It's like, what is it called? Antilla.
Antilla?
I love this thing. It's built, I've mentioned this several episodes back, but my opinion is billionaires are not belligerent enough with their money. This guy did not. This guy is one of the few who is very belligerent with his money. He decided to build himself a house, but because he's rich, and I don't mean rich by India standards, because people underrate...
I remember this.
People underrate the hell out of India whenever they're discussing it sometimes. I mean talking like hot 100 of the world rich.
There is turbo rich.
Yeah,
in
he
India.
Is rich, right? And so he decided to build himself a house, obviously, because he's that rich. It has to have a $1 billion cost. And so he decides to build this massive tower with its own internal firefighting force and police department that spans almost up, it could be described as spanning up to the heavens. And I love the pictures of Antilla because you see this massive, modern, cool-looking skyscraper and just destitution around it.
Now, you know what is like...
Just actual slums all around it.
Because he built it in his hometown, not as a, I represent my hometown, as a, screw you, I got mine.
Well, I don't know if it was all that. I'm not the guy, but I've seen the pictures of just, I'm talking like hovels. They can only be described as, it just looks rough. And then that. that building that would not be out of place in New York or Paris, just there.
No, I would say it looks out of place in New York or Paris, because the thing about this building is, if I remember correctly, it looks like if the Weasleys stacked like
Harry Potter kids, so I don't know where this is
it
going.
Looks like if the Weasleys stacked trailer house was designed by a nouveau riche architect.
Oh, you mean it's off kilter, kind of like stacked?
Well, how the Weasleys' house is described in the book is you have like a main house and it's literally a shack, and then cobbled on top of it are a bunch of other like houses and trailers, so it stacks as high as probably like 6 or 7 stories, but it's like a bunch of wooden planks and scaffolding to lift up some trailers and keep them on top of the other trailers and the house.
I wouldn't say it looks like that. It's again, it's a very modern, it's an architectural feat. It's impressive. It's just, whoa, how is it within eye line of that, you know? But it's the best image I have to describe it. Or I think Brazil has a situation going on too, where you will see just destitution and then million-dollar mansions. And they're right next to each other. It's not like the U.S., because the U.S., there's a gradient to it. You will never see the poorest parts of the U.S. anywhere near the rich parts of the U.S., because there's a middle class to buffer it,
you can drive through suburbs in a lot of places in the U.S., and you can feel the gradient.
You can feel the net worth rising.
Yeah, they're just hot spots of net worth, and you can feel the gradient from low net worth to high net worth as you drive through.
You could experiment with this in your own neighborhood. Just drive and you'll just feel the town, like as you get towards the nicer end of town. Not everywhere has that. Sometimes it's just poor rich.
Yeah,
and that's what New Seria was like, but instead of just regular poor, it was shove them in the gladiatorial pits poor. And so that's where Engron wound up, and his one of his first memories is being in a pit. I'm not talking like a actual pit with hundreds of other kids, and they're told, climb to the top, best of the luck, only one of you can make it. And a bunch of weapons are thrown in, and then acid starts pouring in.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
These guys didn't have cable. The rich got to be entertained somehow.
Whoa.
They didn't have cable or supercars, so this is the next best thing, baby.
Okay.
Yeah, and that is
sure.
How, yeah.
Why not?
And that is how, that is one of his first memories. This is how his life goes pretty much until the Emperor finds him. Thankfully, he does actually find a decent father figure. It's a very Spartacus kind of guy, and this guy's slowly organizing every gladiator into this uprising, because that's what he wants. Engron, being Engron, though, wants to escape now. And so he constantly tries, and this constantly gets him in trouble, so much so that eventually he is put in the arena with his father figure to fight two massive Ogryn, which they do beat. But then they hear over the comms, only one person's allowed to leave the arena at any given point, and there are still two of you. Engron refuses to fight his dad, obviously, and his dad refuses to fight his son, obviously, and he is punished by being, quote, drugged within an inch of his life. And then he has something implanted in his head called the Butcher's Nails. Which...
I know what this is, but...
Yes, they are implants that hook up almost directly to your brain, and they cause unending levels of agony, heightening your adrenaline, and the only things that will make you feel any form of peace while these things are inside you are just rage and fury. That is the only time you will be happy is when you are angrily marching towards something and they just agitate you. It's effective. It turns you into a rabid dog. Now, dude, Angron's perspective for this is so heart-wrenching because we get to see it from somebody else reading his mind, and you get to see how just shattered his memories are in this moment, because he remembers saying no. He remembers being overwhelmed and then drugged within an inch of his life, but because he's a Primarch, he's constantly fighting the drugs. So as he's having surgery performed on him, he's waking up, blacking out, waking up, blacking. It takes so much to knock him out.
Worst nightmare.
Yeah, and he just remembers the coppery smell constantly. He blacks out. He wakes up. He sees something charging him, and he charges it back. He blacks out. Wakes up chained to a wall, covered in viscera, covered in viscera, and he just hears that somebody killed his father in the arena. And this immediately agitates the hell out of him, and he starts almost breaking out of his chains until he hears that it was him who did it. From the guards laughing because they placed their bets on him.
Yeah. And you said this planet isn't bad?
I said it's not bad if you're rich.
Ah, okay.
Angron wasn't. He didn't come with a credit card.
Well, still morally
he,
bad.
He didn't land with a little Amex black card that said Big E, you know? Or like Jimmy S. Pace.
It's Amex.
Oh, shut up. You get the point. But yeah, he didn't land with his connections node. He just showed up as a rather large murderous baby. Perfect for the pits.
Rather large murderous.
And so when he heard this, he immediately broke and howled so loudly and for so long, every single guard was immediately on alert. Like a prison break was about to happen. And he did this until his throat ripped apart and he couldn't make noise anymore.
Huh.
Yeah, because that was the only person who was kind to him. Period.
You know what? That'd have me screaming for, like, death, too.
And it's in that moment that all the memories come back and he realizes that thing that charged him in a bloody haze
was his dad.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's...
cool.
Yeah. Angron's upbringing is so rough, man. It's tough. We'll get into it because this isn't all the misery either. We'll get into it more on his own episode.
More misery?
Yeah, we're gonna have to like speed run through this.
Gee, thank you.
Yeah,
this is the best present ever. Yeah. So a spontaneous gift of misery.
Yeah.
Wow.
He leads a rebellion. He breaks out. And he deals with a few of the gladiators who survived. And the emperor finds him and has been watching this unfold for a little bit, not helping for some reason. But he shows up. Don't worry. It gets worse. He shows up, sees his son, and goes, "I'm real proud of you. This is real cool. Cut it out. Let's go home." And Angron says, "No, I'm not leaving. I'm here to help them. And you know, we're in this together, basically." And the emperor says, "Cool," and just leaves. Angron continues to do his thing, and I'll be fair to him. For a ragtag bunch of starving ex-slaves, they hold out against several armies for quite a while. But eventually, they're so successful that the collective net worth of the planet unites, and they send almost all their armies at him. He's surrounded by 7 well-trained armies.
And he only has how many ragtag
gladiators? 1,000 people tops.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wrap, and the emperor sees this and goes, "Okay, look. There are only 20 of you, and when you're not allowed to die on a backwater planet over this. I'm sorry, I get it, this is super cool, super neat, whatever, you're coming with me." And Angron says no, but before he can even say no, he snapped back up onto the ship, and he has to watch as everything he's ever fought for and everyone he's loved dies.
Has to? The ship hadn't just leaved?
No. I told you, ears plugged, la 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 la.
So the emperor snapped him up onto a ship and then just stayed there, conveniently allowing Angron to sit there and watch all of his friends die.
Oh, by the way, this wasn't just the emperor, which, by the way, is enough to win against most armies. Just the emperor arriving alone is enough.
This would have been a side mission for him.
It was the emperor with custodies present. Custodies who have gone 1,000,000 to 1 and won.
This would not have been a side mission. This would have been a mini game for him.
He could have just sent like 5 custodies and they would have... Problem solved. Yeah. But he didn't. It's the most preventable thing on planet Earth. But he didn't. He didn't fix it.
Cool.
And so... And to make it even worse, I said every single Primarch is a little magical. Do you know what ability Angron got?
If I remember correctly, wasn't it empathy? Just like infinite empathy?
Yes. His ability was to bear the burdens of others with an almost infinite fountain, an infinite ability to take it. Whereas Mortarion was physically, he was the Emperor's physical might, the ability to punch the Emperor and it does nothing to him. It's how hardy he is on the outside. Angron was how hardy he is on the inside. Which I told you, you'd never get that. But this leads to him having this ability, which, funnily enough, is empathy.
Empathy. Put your head inside of me.
Yeah. Angron had this ability that only the Emperor had to touch someone and ease their burdens. Because the Emperor has done this before. Like, Primarchs have described the Emperor touching them on the shoulder and they just feel like...
relief.
Oh, that's so much better. Don't let go, Dad. Don't let go, Dad. Right? It's just he has this calming presence, and Angron had that too, and there are these really touching moments where everyone is asleep and everyone's traumatized. All of them have PTSD. All of them do. And they all have a hard time sleeping unless they link arm in arm, arm in arm, arm in arm, leading to Angron so he can bear all that suffering. He could feel all their pain, everything they were afraid of.
And he was able to just tank it out.
Yeah. And those are the people he watched die. From space, surrounded by gilded warriors.
Again, this would have been a mini game for Emps. He's really not beating the bad dad allegations.
Yeah.
After this, he
effectively goes, yeah, those guys are cool and all, but here are much better sons. They're going to do the job way better. Here, have fun. Here's a whole ship. Good luck. Goodbye. And he skedaddles. I'm talking quick. He gets out of there fast and for good reason, because Angron then picks a corner of the ship and sits there silently. Because I think this is the last thing that Angron said to the Emperor and vice versa before the Emperor just hightailed it out of there real quick. And it is, I should have died there with my brothers and sisters on Nusaria. From now on, your son is nothing but a ghost. To which the Emperor just looks him up and down and goes, a ghost will do.
God damn. This has to have been on purpose.
This is why people think he planned the heresy. Because this is too belligerent. You
has
know what I mean?
To have been on purpose.
This is too just this callous.
Has to have been on purpose.
We'll get into the Emperor on his own episode. There's so many ways you can perceive him.
You have told me about events where he has been kinder to his children.
But he's never... There are times when people have psychically spoken to him and he's admitted, I saw them as nothing but tools. This is him just treating them how he feels. Where he's just like, okay, cool. I don't care how you feel. You can be a ghost all you want. You're still like 9'2" and mostly muscle. I can work with a ghost. Like, dude, look at you. You're fine. Get out there. It's like a wrench telling you I am dead to you, but the wrench still works. Okay, cool. Grab this bolt.
Yes, but this is a wrench with thoughts, feelings, and just watched his friends die.
And you must remember, the Emperor's very old. To him, Angron is just a wrench. And a particularly uppity wrench at that. So after this, Angron immediately just picks a corner of his ship and sits there quietly. Which is real awkward for the world eaters, because every legion has this fangirl moment where they meet their dad and their dad just looks at them and goes into a corner. Does not care about them.
To be fair, on the scale from I'm going to help you solve the red thirst and decimation, this is probably hard neutral.
You say that, but the world eaters did have some form of command structure. Before Angron arrived, right? And they were pretty much the Imperium stick up until then, where you would comply or the world eaters would come for you. And they'd built enough of a reputation that everyone said compliance.
They would eat your world.
Compliance. And so they did have some form of command structure, and obviously the guy in charge was like, well, let me see if I can get Dad to come out of his room. Immediately turned into red paste. Second in command goes and tries the same thing, red paste. Over and over and over until they actually have no command structure. And there's just one guy named Karn who walks in there and takes the beating. Doesn't die, just takes the beating the whole time, calmly explaining to Angron that, just please, we're not that bad. If you join us, you'll see we're just as capable as those you knew before, if not more. And this actually manages to snap Angron out of it and go, maybe you're not all bad. Maybe some of... There is potential in some of you.
If you can take at least half of what I gave everybody else in the gladiatorial arena.
And so from there, he came back and actually became kind of a dad. He wanted to train them up and add discipline to them. So he changed their name from the Warhounds to the World Eaters, and then he instituted gladiatorial pits. Because his argument was there is no better test of combat than just real live fire combat.
Holy crap, this is generational trauma. Because this is literally like, this is what worked for me and look how I turned out.
Yep, I came out fine. I came out fine.
This is literally...
Yeah, and every World Eater started bearing scars from their brutal, brutal training. From there, he would impose a standard that for every world you take, you have to do it in 31 hours, which was the length of time that...
Yeah, I could just imagine Angron. I can just imagine Angron from a ship just watching down from the observation deck with a stopwatch.
Well, the stopwatch was set to the length of a day in Nuceria, his homeworld. So 31,
oh, really?
Yeah, 31 hours.
Huh.
So it was like, you must do it in a day, start to finish. And if you didn't, undergo decimation.
Ah, so he...
You jumped the gun.
I did jump the gun, didn't I?
So that's two Primarchs now who whip out the decimation when needed. And I'll be fair, most of them did meet that deadline. It led to some horrific casualties, but they did meet that deadline most of the time. Until they bumped into this very odd planet where... There was 1,000 people on it, tops. And they refused to comply. They just, their exact argument, this planet's exact argument was, leave me alone. I want nothing to do with your space Jesus. I want nothing to do with Jimmy Space. I don't know who the hell you 20 kids are. I don't care. I don't care. Just leave us
just
alone.
Just leave me alone.
Leave me alone. I won't bug you. You won't bug me. Which is a sad trend in the Great Crusade that isn't covered enough. A lot of planets weren't actively malicious against the Imperium. They just didn't want
wanted to be their own thing.
I just want to be my own thing. We're working just fine. We don't need you. Please, God. We'll call you if we need help.
Just leave me alone. I'll leave you alone.
Leave me alone. Some were even amicable. We'd rather, like, kind of like a vassal state thing where we'll gladly trade with you and all that, but we're not going to buy into this whole greater Imperium thing. Because the Emperor of Man is the Emperor of Man. Angron was sent onto the planet. where he quickly discovered that there may be 1,000 people, but they are all suffering from a debilitating disease. Meaning that they could not really be on the surface of the planet. They were interred somewhere in like iron lungs kinds of things. But they did have millions of machines that they were all hooked up to. And those machines ripped through them and made it so they could not meet that deadline at all.
Hmm.
Yeah. And the worst problem is, usually when a Primarch's on the battlefield, everyone fights much harder. When Angron's on the battlefield, they fight worse. They can't keep up with him. He doesn't care. He's not trying to keep pace with them. He is just... It's so funny. There's a position called Devourer that is Angron's personal bodyguard in the World Eaters. Completely useless. It's seen... The only way you can become a Devourer is you kill a Devourer. So it's a really cool gig, kind of, but everyone realizes it's totally useless because even they can't keep up with him.
It's just...
Like, what are you guarding, really?
He's leaving them all in the dust.
Yes.
He's and saying so, every man for themselves, and then...
No, he's the nails have taken over because he got more implanted as he was stuck on Nuceria for
If I remember correctly, aren't all of those, they kind of look like dreads in a lot of art, aren't all of those just butcher's nails?
Mm-hmm. Just and so when they
every single one of them is a tail of a butcher's nail.
Yep, and when they grab him, there's no hope of any World Eater keeping up. So a lot of the time, they kind of fight worse trying to keep up with Dad... Because they hey, Dad, look at what we can do. And he just does not care. He is exactly how the Emperor treated him, is exactly how he is treating his own sons. And so when they're unable to meet this enrages Angron. And he immediately just, decimate yourself right now, before my very eyes. To which they go, whoa, even you couldn't do this, dude. Like, cut us some slack. You were there, right? To which Angron responds to this in a calm and logical manner. Which is just massacring his way through his own ship.
Calm.
And rational. He did not like that. He did not like being talked back to. So it took all of the Legion psychers to knock him out. Because it was either that or we all die right now on this ship.
Cool.
And when they tried to wake him up, he wasn't waking up.
Did they knock? They knocked him out too hard.
Yeah.
They did too good of a job.
Slight sting of fear there of,
did we kill him? Is it Jover?
But around that same time, somebody had figured, because they've seen Dad with the butcher's nails, right? And so they obviously want the butcher's nails themselves. But because of their biology, every time you try, it either fails or kills the Marine. Somebody in this time had figured out how to do it. And a guy named Karn, if you remember him, was the first one in line. He's immediately like, yep, let's do it. Let's get this. And so while Angron is knocked out, a good swath of them, about 1,000 or so, immediately get those nails implanted. And this kind of causes a weird break in them. Because when Angron wakes up, he sees several, just thousands of them, ready and itching the way he is for a fight. And those guys go down to the planet exactly where those poor people are trapped in iron lungs and just work them. Just speed bag them. There's no chance. They're an iron lung, and these are enraged warriors just cutting a line through them. But there are some who think that's a terrible idea. That is such an awful idea.
Why would you do that?
Yeah, why would you do that? And so they go down there to confront them after this massacre that they've perpetuated. And the response is, what do you think the response is from the group that has the butcher's nails at this point?
Massacre.
It's a secondary massacre, baby. And at that point, the world eaters are mostly those with the butcher's nails, with the only exception being Psykers. And this is an important note because, well, Psykers can't take to the butcher's nails.
I figured. But then why would they be left alive? Useful?
Useful.
Useful.
And also, maybe it could be made to work. We don't know. We just barely made it work on Space Marines. They did try to put them in Psykers, which does not work well. Psykers require a lot of discipline, a lot of self-control, and so they can resist them. And B, if they do manage to take those things and the butcher's nails drive them mad, then they immediately blow up effectively.
Being a Psyker is already just like a ticking time bomb of stacking debuffs that just, the moment you go mad, you become a demon, right?
No, you can blow up or open a portal to a demon. It's really messy stuff. My favorite is one who had it implanted and immediately, like, lightning just started firing out of his eyes uncontrollably. But so you don't put your nails in Psykers. It's just not a good idea. There's other reasons we'll get to later, but at this point, people start hearing about what happened there. The fact that Angron not only massacred that planet, but also massacred his own sons, and they're now getting the butcher's nails implanted. And Leman Russ confronts Angron about this.
The executioner versus the executioner.
Yeah. It's Angron has some really good quotes against his brothers. He makes some very, despite having nails in his head that make him nothing but angry all the time, he makes some very good arguments. He makes some very, very, very cogent arguments. Righty and lefty. No. Like, no, I'm talking like actually decently worded. Like when Russ confronts him and tells him that, what are you doing? This is traitorous, and you are doing nothing but subjecting these people to these nails because they like you. He then debates that, what are we except the same slavers I had to deal with growing up? What choice do we give people when we arrive? Comply or die? That's it. And he argues that if I was a more moral man, I would go to the Imperial Palace and take the Emperor's head myself, because he sees the Emperor as the ultimate tyrant.
That name keeps appearing. So it wasn't Righty and Lefty. It was Righty and Lefty.
Yeah, he genuinely... It's a very, very, very...
Those who know neuroscience know.
You're stupid. It's a very, very... You don't need to know neuroscience to know the brain's divided. Okay, whatever.
Some people don't.
It's every picture... Whatever.
Some people don't.
It's every picture of a brain ever? Sure.
I told that to my mother and she didn't believe me.
Whatever. I'm not dealing with that. Russ hears this and... It's kind of evident to him, like, oh, this, I'm not going to be able to talk him out of this. So they start an actual massive duel, and it ends in a very weird way. They rip into each other from both sides. These are some of the most brutal legions on either side. And it ends with Angron disarming Russ, ready to kill him, but every world eater ever surrounded. And so, in theory, on paper, Angron might have been able to kill Russ right then and there, but would not have lived to tell the tale.
Yeah.
And so the fight ends with both sides leaving, publicly saying that they won, but privately, nobody's really sure how this one's going to work out. After hearing about this, the emperor himself orders Angron to stop implanting the butcher's nails, to which Angron says, nope. come over here and stop me yourself, he says, to which the emperor does nothing. And this, by the way, at this point, I don't think you understand. When they massacred their own brothers, they ripped the heads off them. They took their skulls.
Yeah.
And they have been spotted a couple of times now, shouting, blood for the Primarch, skulls for the Golden Throne.
Yep.
It's...
Yep.
And Angron himself has argued in front of his own sons and other legions that if he was a good man, he would just go kill the Emperor.
I mean, we just heard from that quote him saying, if I were like worth my salt, I would just go to the Imperial Palace and take his head myself.
Yeah, critically, take his head. It's some of the most obvious, some of the most clearly.
What Khorne would do for the Emperor's skull on his throne?
Oh, he'd pay top dollar for it.
It'd go right up like on the top
immediately. It'd be fantastic. It'd tie the whole room together. It's one of the most obvious, oh, you're going to go traitor legions out there. Immediately, you take one look at them and you go,
And yet nothing was done, which is odd considering two legions are redacted for ? Reasons.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie, World Eaters should have been redacted just based off of some of the stuff they've said. To be fair, though, if I remember correctly, the Zealot and Darktide shouts the same thing, too. And they are not killed for it.
They're barely allowed to live.
Yeah, but they're still not killed for it. There's an Inquisitor on that ship.
The playable characters of Darktide are barely allowed to live. They were on their way to an execution.
They still shout it.
They
still shout it out loud is what I'm saying. And I can only imagine when they shout it, the Inquisitor goes, "Huh? What was that?"
Just kind of like looks in their direction. Just like,
All right, reject. Sure. Sure. So it's no surprise that when Horus says, "I would like to turn against Dad," Angron said yes immediately. Yes. Probably faster than Horus could finish the sentence. Angron was one of the first on board. He was there for many, many, many massacres. I think both Istvaans he was there for.
Massacres seem to be his forte, so...
Yeah, I will make a cogent point. He was constantly... Or... I'll make a point in Angron's favor. He was constantly kind of a detriment to Horus.
Really?
Because Horus had very specific plans that were very crafty, and Angron...
Just kind of ran in there?
No, he saw them as dishonorable. If I'm going to turn against my brothers, I'm not going to stab them in the back. I will look them in the eye as I kill them for their actions. Which is very cool, very good, but you're looking the master of strategy in the eye.
Yeah.
You're going to lose, buddy. But Angron didn't care.
Yeah, like Horus's plan was send the lion far off to the outer reaches of the galaxy so he won't be there when I do my initial assault.
Angron would have said,
no, I want him there.
Mm-hmm. I want him there. I want this. I need this smoke.
I need this. Need this.
I'll be honest, kind of a detriment for most of the heresy, but it's fine. From there, they go on this weird crusade. Well, not a weird crusade. It's their fault that the Ultramarines are impotent for most of the heresy. It's them and Lorgar's fault, specifically.
Red versus blue.
Actually, at this point, they were still blue. Fun fact about their heraldry. It was white, blue, and gold before the heresy.
And I remember. I've seen that. Because when I was looking for art for the Karn video, there is like a lot of Dornian heresy art appearing for some odd reason. And it's white, blue, and gold.
Yes, and they never repainted it. It just now happens to be stained red and bronze. How did that happen? That tells you what they were doing for most of the heresy. They were just going from world after world after world, living up to their name and being a thorn against Gilliman's, deep in Gilliman's side. This comes to a head when they return on Angron's homeworld, specifically where his brothers and sisters had died, and Gilliman inadvertently crushes one of their skulls. Can you imagine Angron's response to that?
Rage.
Fury. Well, first, when he first arrived, he fell to his knees in tears at just how many skeletons he saw there. But the moment Angron crushes that skull, I mean, the moment Gilliman does it, Angron loses it at him and proceeds to beat the tar out of... He rips half his face off. Yeah. It's one of the most brutal beatings.
He goes full chimp.
I am a Gilliman fan. This is very well documented.
Sorry, I'm borrowing your mug for today.
I know you are. But this is one of the most brutal beatings Gilliman receives. I'm not talking physically. I'm talking verbally, too. He dresses Gilliman down. He genuinely shouts at him and argues that, yes, of course you will shout about courage and honor. Courage and honor. Courage and honor. For you, you've always had it easy. You landed on a planet, had a mom, had a dad, had an army ready for you. You were taught exactly what to do from birth. You were raised in the lap of luxury. And when dad met you, he happily let you join. Like, oof, you don't know a thing about being courageous. You have no idea what honor means. If you're really courageous, you'd be on my side. Because it takes real courage to stand against the man you know you can never beat. It takes nothing to stand by his side. And he
makes some cogent points.
He makes some cogent points while beating the brakes off of Gilliman, and Lorgar's in the background holding a whole sermon. Like, in the background, Lorgar's just testify. The whole time.
I need to hear more of this. Lorgar just screaming gospel music in the background. Oh, an entire choir of word bearers just behind going, him.
Yeah. They're doing the whole like clapping. Yeah. And the two, like it is a whole thing. And whatever Gilliman hoped to accomplish here does not work, as Lorgar's ceremony, his sermon, Lorgar's Sermon on the Mount, falls back in sync. And immediately creates a warp storm big enough to cut off all of Gilliman's realm from everything else, which is why he was impotent. And immediately, right there and then, in front of his own sons, turn Angron into a demon Primarch.
Oh, this is where it happens.
This is how it happens.
Okay.
To be fair, in this moment, he was so angry, he was actually going to die. Like, the Butcher's Nails, the way it worked, is because Angron's a Primarch, he's constantly healing. And so they'd bury deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper the angrier he got. And eventually it was just going to all the way through. So, to prevent that, let's make him a demon who still has them because fate is so cruel to Angron. What matters, that's Angron's story. What matters is his sons witness all of this happening, lose it because it's so cool, but the Psykers who were still on board, who were still alive, try desperately to stop this. They're doing everything in their power to prevent Lorgar from ascending him into a World Eater because they think it's the worst thing for Dad.
Which, to be fair, mm-hmm. they're not wrong.
They're really not wrong. They are repaid for this loyalty. And this is the most brutal thing. The sons of a Primarch will always be loyal to them, even when they're knobs. I don't know if you've noticed from the two Chaos ones we've covered so far, they are awful to their kids, but they still love them, no matter what. And here are these Psykers, who up until this point had been treated as complete pariahs by the Legion. I mean, being a Psyker, you put out this kind of aura around yourself, right? And for most people, they don't notice it. They don't care, right? Well, it's in the Imperium they care, but that's neither here nor there. For the World Eaters, it agitates the Nails. And so Angron, when he first met them, went, get away from me. And before anyone else had the Nails, they saw Dad ostracize them, and Dad's doing it.
Sorry. Why not? Why can't we?
Sorry, can't sit at the cool kids table now, you know? And so all the Psykers are just slowly pushed out further and further, and as more and more of the Legion got nails implanted in them, they finally understood why Angron hated to be around them. And so what started as just social isolation became just disrespect. They'd spit at their boots when they walked by. Yeah. Hmm. It was horrific, and they still tried to save Angron in that moment. And in that moment, they were repaid for it by being slaughtered by him. That is the end of Psykers and the World Eaters, period.
That is a shame.
Because in his eye, well, now he's a demon of Khorne. Korn doesn't like magic, and in his eyes, psychers are useless. They can't have the nails implanted. They never get up close and personal. They only cause me pain.
So just...
And then they tried to stop this from happening.
Let's solve a problem right here, right
Despite now. Angron himself being kind of a psyker and having an ability that would have made maybe even Vulcan seem regular compared to his kindness. Yeah. Which is why I find it so interesting and compelling if you consider for a moment that Angron, current worshipper of Korn, chosen champion of the Messiah of Mayhem, and the death knell of a thousand worlds, is the Emperor's mercy and empathy.
It's...
And yeah, sure, it didn't go according to plan, but the argument's still there. It's very twisted, but in bumping into Angron in 40K could be construed as genuinely merciful relative to some of the other stuff you could bump into.
Well, considering Nurgle will give you fun gifts.
I can't wait for that
episode. Tzeentch will mutate you into a weird cosmic horror demon and then play with you like a voodoo doll. And Slaanesh will make a harp out of your tendons and then some extra S&M gear out of the leftover tendon.
Whips excite me.
Yeah.
Come on.
Just getting stabbed in the face?
Real nice. Real simple. Real quick. It compared to, and it's not even just compared to that, compared to the miserable lives that most people lead in 40K, because most people live under the oppressive thumb of the most brutal regime imaginable.
Most people live under the oppressive thumb of the most brutal regime imaginable, while also living under the weight of an entire hive world.
Yeah. And it's a thousand people every day are painfully and viscerally ripped apart and sacrificed to a skeleton that wants nothing to do with this roiling carcass of a dream he once had. It, compared to living there, or bumping into some of the other stuff in 40K, bumping into Angron?
It's very twisted, but it's...
It's peaceful. It's calm. It's like getting hit by a train.
It's a mercy calling.
If you are strong enough to stop a train with your bare hands, good for you. Congratulations. You can deal with this. If you're not, accept it. That's all. And it's way better. It's so much better. Because, I'll be honest, yeah, sure, the world eaters look horrifying. They hit you once, you're dead. They don't drag it out. They just hit you really hard once.
I have seen a lot of Cornate Chaos Marines armor, and it can be best described as very sharp.
Yeah, it looks like if they ran into you, you'd die.
It looks like if you touched it, your entire you would excise all of your fingers.
Yeah, probably.
But it's not like maybe. Slaaneshi demons would go, oh yeah, this is fun, and slowly drag that along different parts of you.
Mm-hmm.
But Cornate observers are just going to hit you once.
Oh, Slaaneshi followers have different kind of armor. They're the only ones where you get a standard issue helmet, pauldrons, and belly button piercing. Oh. So their armor is different. We'll get into that later. but that's something I definitely want to explore more in an Angron episode, how he is genuinely a reflection of the Emperor's mercy, no matter how twisted that may appear. And also remember, he can take away people's pain. There's a non-zero chance as he's massacring, he can kind of vaguely feel it and feel what he's inflicting upon others, which might be why he doesn't drag it out. You're just, oh my god, it's Angron! And so with that, every single psyker in the Legion is dead. Ultramar is effectively useless for the rest of the Heresy. And I say that as an Ultramarine fan, man. And from there, they continue to go world after world after world, fully aboard the Korn train.
Blood for the Blood God, Skulls for the Skull Throne. Okay. Maybe a little bit of blood to paint my armor, that'd be sweet.
It's more than that.
What do you mean more than that? How do you get more Cornate than that?
Angron squats a Titan.
He what?
And multiple World Eaters have kill counts that would count as an Exterminatus. Their ship begins reacting to this. You turn on a sink, red flows out. The walls creak and heave, and then, like, they start bleeding aboard their ship. They've committed... Karn, as he walks, just leaves bloody footprints. He's dried off. He dried off hours ago.
He took a shower, even.
Yeah. And this is just a thing. They are so, so... And that's without mentioning that Angron has cordoned off a section of the ship just for him. Anyone who goes in there dies immediately, and you can just vaguely hear Hamana, 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 Hamana leaving that area.
They are on the corn train.
They're fully in chance of like 8, 8, 8, 8, just leaving there. They are such a problem for everyone and anyone on board and even off board. People try and escape the ship. They try and get out of it, which leads to them all getting shot down because nobody escapes the Conqueror.
Nobody escapes. You're in this now.
Yeah, no. You're aboard now. And... I cannot oversell what the World Eaters get up to. They have to lock Angron in a cage and then orbitally drop him.
He's a nuke.
Yes, because he would not stop raging at anything and everything. And so, genuinely, a big problem the World Eaters face is how do we contain this until we need it? And so they just throw it in that maze Perturabo built for Vulcan. And so he's just going through wall after wall after wall after wall after wall, howling. In this infinite maze.
Was Vulcan in there at the same time?
No, this is after he escaped.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, they just lock Angron in there, and whenever they're ready, they just drop him down onto Terra.
Jesus.
I love how they're depicted during the siege, because it's all Horus has this master plan, and we shall attack from here, here, here. Where are the World Leaders? And you see them climbing the gates and charging in, just ripping through everything and anything. And they just go, just drop Angron, drop Angron, drop him, drop him. It's whatever, it's whatever. He may apparate there anyhow.
They hit the big red drop Angron button.
Yeah, and I love the art that comes out of the... First of all, because the World Eaters are in every important fight, they have some amazing art. There's this one shot of Angron landing, and it's just these black streaks wafting off of him as he burns on reentry. There's this fight he has with Sanguinius where Sanguinius is winning because he's used to having wings, and Angron's wings can barely heft him off the ground. And so it's this very, like... brutal. It's this graceful engine flying through the sky and this just massive thing charging after it. The whole time, World Eaters are just burning through everything.
There is no reason that an Angron should be able to fly.
His wings have bigger biceps than his arms, dude. Look at the model closely. They're huge. At some point, they just start massacring anything and everything in sight. The fight... Angron realizes he can't win a fight with Sanguinius in the sky, so he just lands on the ground and starts massacring Blood Angels, because it's either you'll lose your legion to me or you'll come and stop this. To which Sanguinius obviously tries to stop it, gets chokeslammed by Angron, and it's a World Eaters video. I have to mention it, even though it's a bit undignified. Sanguinius then manages to get a grip on the... he grabs Angron's ponytail.
Ah.
There's no two ways about this. And begins yanking out the butcher's nails.
He went for the hair?
Yes. Which is so painful, Angron begs for mercy.
Well, those butcher's nails are in his brain.
Yeah, and Sanguinius shows no mercy and yanks out nails and whatever was attached to them.
Brain.
Mm-hmm. To which Korn laughs because he does not care where it flows from. He just cares that it's flowing. And the moment the
world... I'm sure Korn was sitting at his throne just like, I wanted you guys anyway.
Yeah.
As long as you're doing it, it's fine. I mean,
I'll be honest. The Blood Angels doing that, Korn's like, game recognized game. That was a good move. Look at him. Look at him. He's slumped over there and it's just an ocean pouring out. Good job. Good job. Keep it going. So
I'd imagine Korn on his throne. You know that one map in For Honor where the king, I can't remember his name, is just sitting there just like bad mouthing the fighters in the arena? I'd imagine that's Korn at every fight Angron's at.
Pretty much. The World Eaters see their father go down and they just lose it. It is at this point that in one day, one guy gets a million confirmed kills. He dies atop a heap of bodies. And I'm listen. He didn't use any trickery. He didn't use any firearms. He used these hands to do it.
And so this is righty lefty.
Yes, this one was full righty and lefty. And unfortunately, the heresy does not go well for them. I mean, you know how this goes. Horace is dead, dad's broken, and all the traitors, world leaders included, slink away into the war.
Arguably, the heresy went well for no one. Maybe the Ultramarines, because they were given a little bit more sway after this, but...
No. Nobody won the heresy. Lorgar.
Lorgar won. Lorgar got to chill. No, because even now he has his old book thrown in his face.
Nope, but he was still right. In a weird way, this is the future that he was going for. So, Lorgar.
Fair enough.
Yeah, he's the only one who's up after the heresy. He's up.
Now he just sits in the warp rewriting the Bible.
Yeah, pretty much. Or hosting like the most... I would love to see... If I can find a church, I think I know where I'm going to shoot Lorgar's episode.
I bought a Lehman Russ tank. Cash. I bought a Vashtor model. Cash.
Yeah, Lorgar's having a great time. So at this point... the World Eaters kind of... This is where they hard enter their modern incarnation. Because they go off into the Eye of Terror. They find a world. They wind up fighting over it with some other traitor legions. And they have to stop the fight because it's so cold at night. Even Astartes could freeze to death. Which pisses off Karn, the guy who got 1,000,000 kills on Earth. And he decides to take matters into his own hands. And reprimand these pansies for stopping a good fight. By burning their shelters while they're still inside them.
It's not warm enough for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Friend or foe, it doesn't matter. He just starts heating up every single shelter. And immediately, everyone's mad at him. Except for Khorne.
Because of course.
Because of course not. They go try and rat him out to Dad, but Dad's far too broken and far too self-hating at this point to deal with any of this.
Dad is a full-on... He's just demon.
Yeah, and so it's at this point that they really do shatter. They realize that he's not going to be here for us, and Khorne doesn't care. He just wants it to flow, so I will make sure it flows. And so they shatter into these warbands that are still active to this day and will constantly appear at different fights, sometimes against each other, just because it's
where it's flowing. Doesn't matter where it flows from.
Yeah. Pre-heresy, they were kind of refined. Like I said, they had drop pod assaults. They did kind of care about the loss of life they will take. But nowadays, it's irrelevant. They win through nothing but sheer savagery and might, pretty much. And they don't really... It's a pretty flat hierarchy, just because... Can you beat me? Can you not? If you can beat me, you're tight. If you can't, you're already dead. Sorry. You know, it's very even distribution of power. This does lead to them losing a lot of people, as you can imagine. And one may be wondering, how on God's green earth do they replenish these numbers?
You know, I wasn't wondering that, but now I am. How do they replenish these numbers?
Kidnapping Marines and putting butcher's nails in them.
You're joking.
No.
Just grabbing any Marine and just... There's a stick in your head now?
Yes. You have to remember, Marines, Space Marines are the Emperor's... They're his finest weapon. They're made for war. So... I would argue the default option for a Space Marine when they fall to Chaos is Khorne. And so all you need to do is get him to fall to Chaos.
Stick a butcher's nail in his head, cause him to go mad.
That'll work.
And then Khorne just goes, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, and so that's why I would argue they're no longer really the Sons of Angron and more just this legion that serves Khorne. They're just grabbing random Marines at this point.
They're de facto a bunch of rogue warbands.
Yeah, they also use this thing called flash indoctrination where they just pry open your... Yeah. Okay, you laugh, and it is really funny, but I haven't even explained the mechanics of it, which are even funnier. What? It's a canon name for it. I can't change this. Only GW can.
Flash indoctrination.
Yeah, flash indoctrination.
It's like a cult member walks up to you and just goes, Cthulhu! And then now you're just in a robe.
Well, it's kind of like that, actually. It's not that far off. A coordinate member just walks up to you, pries your jaw open, shoves a brain down your throat. And you immediately get every memory of whoever that brain belonged to, and you now kind of think you're them. And so sometimes you have these interesting cases of coronate Marines who remember the long war. I remember the heresy. And you weren't there. Like, they straight up were not there. They just think they were.
They just get, spoiler alert, Kenjaku'd?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
And so they've kind of just become, like I said, Khorne's Legion. They don't really have much to do with Ingron anymore. They did have some customs and beliefs before the heresy. They're all gone now. I think my favorite being the Triumph Rope, which basically, whenever he'd given that 31-hour edict, they'd like carve a line in themselves. And if they won, it would heal normally and you'd just have a scar. If they lost, you'd grab dirt from the planet and pound it in and it would make it heal black.
Oh, so you'd remember.
You would see every loss someone had. Angron had no confirmed losses on his body at all. Though he argues that that is only because he was never allowed to put the soil of Nusaria in.
That... Jesus.
Right.
Every time we talk about Angron, just the tragic... I love his tragedy.
Right.
I love his tragedy.
It's so brutal.
As much as it's very unreasonable, why did the Emperor treat him like that?
The Emperor could have fixed... Angron is the most fixable of all of the Chaos ones. So fixable. Whereas Horus is the least fixable. He did everything for Horus, and he still turned out bad.
Horus was the awful, evil trust fund baby.
Yeah, pretty much. They also used to have these fun 2v2s, where they'd, quite literally two Marines chained to each other and fighting two other Marines. And they wouldn't have to be just World Eaters. So, other legions would join in for the fun of it.
Just why not?
Yeah.
That's kind of funny.
Right?
That's I really like that.
And they had quite a bit of culture. It's just a damn shame that all of it is gone now. They only have one culture, which is just Rampage. It's just rampaging and collecting skulls and blood. It's enough to make the Red Cross jealous.
The culture of Khorne.
Yes. Yes.
They're no longer World Eaters. They're just Khorneite demons at this point.
Some of them are. Straight. Yeah. Yeah. We'll touch on them now. There are these people called the Eight Bound.
The Eight Bound.
Because Khorne is, I mentioned this before, Khorne is actively invested in their lives. He plays a part in their day to day. I mean, there have been multiple cases where you blow half of a World Eater apart and all the viscera on the battlefield just, and it reforms and they can keep fighting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Just because Khorne was like, oh, you are not stopping this show now.
This is entertaining. Yeah. I want to see more of this.
And then there are the Eight Bound, who are bound in something called the Eight Cage. Okay. Yes. Get it out now.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Hey, can you figure out Khorne's lucky number?
I already knew. Really?
Yes. And they have these probes and needles connected all over their skin and to the butcher's nails themselves. And once
are there eight of them?
No, there's... Oh, it's a ton. If you look at the art, there's so many...
Is the number of them divisible by eight?
Possibly. Honestly, it feels like they have a lot of divisible by eights, but I've noticed too many threes that could be fixed very easily. That's neither here nor there. If you look at the art, there's so many things attaching them to the cage, it looks like they're being pulled apart. It's really brutal stuff. And the moment that cage is shut, you just hear screaming. You just hear screaming, and the thing is shaking as their soul is transported into Khorne's backyard for a 1v1 against something. A battle for their very souls. And sometimes they show up in an arena just painted in viscera. Sometimes they have to fight to climb atop a mountain of skulls. Other times it's just demons torturing you. What matters is you really want to win this fight. You really want to win this fight, because if you don't, you're not leaving that cage.
You are in there forever.
No. If you lose the fight, occasionally, all your flesh will expand outwards and break it as you become a chaos spawn.
Cool.
It's just this hideous pile that is pile. Writhing. Yes.
So we have an Akira moment.
Yes. Or they will open the cage and you'll just kind of pour out.
Ew.
Slice to ribbons.
Ew.
Well, you lost the fight. Or alternatively, sometimes they'll open the cage and nothing's there.
Oh, frightening. So we go from Akira to Iu to...
Yeah. But if you do manage to win, you get 8 separate demons bound inside you, all fighting for control at any given moment, and you become an 8-bound.
So why can't... Just give me the controller.
Basically. And they're terrifying enough. However, if all of you wind up on the same page, you can become something known as the Exalted 8-bound, which is when all 9 of you are focused on the same thing, and these guys are Angron's current bodyguards. Their weapons meld into them, so they're never without them, and they can keep up with Angron.
Huh.
In his current state.
Yeah, that's...
And they are the one thing he's not allowed to rage at. Khorne actively likes them.
Just like, no,
yes.
No.
It's the one thing where Khorne will massacre everything. I mean, Angron will massacre everything, stop, and they will still be there. It's so cool. Oh, I love these guys so much.
Although, the 9 of them.
Yeah, you see what I mean? Sometimes they throw... It should have been 7 demons making you 8. You bound together, you know?
Well, either way, you're kind of like between a rock and a hard place. You either put 7 in there and then suddenly, Slaanesh could sneak something in there. Or you keep it with 8 demons. They slip into you and now you become 9 beings. And now Tzeentch is like, Yeah. Can I get in on this action?
So there's a couple of that. There's also the 8 sons. It's a set of 8 brothers,
yep,
who, they're world leaders. They massacred a place and started building a pile of viscera so tall. Because what they'll do often on battlefields is they build effigies to Khorne out of everything they've massacred.
This is Doom. They build gore nests.
Yes. Yes, they're very Doom. And so they built up this massive one, and as it was reaching the top, it started gurgling.
And they built the super gore nest.
All of them looked at each other and went, oh, Khorne's watching. And they immediately turned on everyone who was helping them. And they added them to the pile, and once the pile grew tall enough, bam, a portal opened, and they were spat out in a new battlefield. And now they just do this over and over and over, causing these things called like blood waves that will just come wash over them and Khorne's forces, and then they're gone, and then they just appear somewhere else, and this is their main mode of transit. This is their public bus. It's just a blood wave comes in, here they are, leaves.
I'm a huge advocate for public transit. We need this right now.
Yes,
let us start building super gore nests that via instant transmission of blood wave.
And these blood waves were used during the Blood Crusades. Because
it's either the number 8 or the word blood.
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's one of two things.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, say what you will about Khorne. Simple. Simple,
real,
honest.
Real nice, real simple. They have these units that ride, they basically drive on air.
Of all of the Marines I thought would be airbenders, the Worldenders were at the bottom of that list.
It's more of a Santa and his sleigh situation.
Oh, okay.
There's a guy at the very front who rides this juggernaut with a flaming trail that allows like tanks to drive behind him midair. And it's the stupidest thing, but my god. He's actually interesting because he argues that collecting every skull is stupid, just get more forehead. And Khorne seems to like this argument, because everyone else is too busy stacking them high. He's just getting net more skulls. So Khorne seems to favor him, because he will show up somewhere and it will begin to just rain viscera.
Oh, he really is like Santa.
He kind of is like Santa. He's like World Leader Santa, pretty much.
Santa is dressed in red.
Yes, and the suit's made of a demon he beat. That's not a joke. He beat a demon and then forged it into the helmet he wears, and it lets him kind of like slightly see.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Santa.
No, this guy. No, not Santa.
Do you think the red jacket is made out of a demon he beat?
Would explain a lot. Explain how he gets places as fast as he does.
Yeah, it would.
But, you know, the world eaters have so
we
many.
We need more, like, we need... We need more champion saints. Like, I would love to see Saint Patrick make a full, like, snake scale suit out of the snakes he drove out of Ireland.
Oh, what? That feels like he suddenly looks like a Texan. You know that, right? Put a man in a snakeskin suit. Suddenly he belongs like the Deep South.
I'm wondering. I think that'd be cool, though.
I don't think so.
I think it'd be funny.
I don't think. Do you know how many snakes you'd need? Do you know how many snakes you would need to make a snakeskin suit?
Well, he drove all of the snakes out of Ireland.
Fair enough. He probably has enough. But of all of the Chaos Legions, it is not an exaggeration to say that these guys are the most active. They just show up to any fight. And if they're there, present in full force, it's never good. Never good. They showed up on Armageddon, which did not end well.
It doesn't seem to end well for anybody. Why don't we just abandon Armageddon?
Because it's cool. It's got a nice name. I want to stay on Armageddon.
Okay, no. It's got beachfront property. Move on. I don't want to do the Armageddon thing again.
They've shattered planets before several times, and they're just this constant needle in the Imperium's side. And that's the kind of role they've been relegated to serve as for a little bit now. If I have any complaints about the World Eaters, it's the fact that we don't see enough about individual World Eaters. They are very much so kind of a plot point.
Yeah.
You know? Either an Angron story or as something that... Yeah, sure, that's there. Fight it.
They kind of arrive to be a tide of gore and viscera, and then they move on.
They're red orcs, pretty much. Yeah. Which, I mean, works for Khorne, but I would like to see more of
Why
them.
Why aren't they super fast, then?
Because they're... Shut up. I can't think of anything. I would love to see them get more about them. I'd like to see, my favorite things about the World Eaters is when we get to see their philosophy and we get to see their internal thoughts and how miserable they all are.
It was so, like, Angron made some cogent points.
I have, yeah.
Like, I would love to see more of that, because I wonder if his kids have kind of acquired the same, I mean, obviously he's probably only on yelling terms with everybody, screeching, roaring, the like. I wonder if his kids kind of acquired the same philosophy and speaking knowledge as him.
Spoiler alert, enough of them have that I want to do a philosophy episode on them. Enough. They make some really, like, from Angron arguing that, like, Dad made Dorne to be a builder, Magnus to make thinkers, and Gilliman to make bureaucrats, I was made to be a conqueror. That's it. From him just arguing his very nature is to be disposable, which is why Dad always loved him, to this scene where it starts with a World Eater at the foot of a Titan, right? And he, like, for a second, the nails abate, and he's able to think and just how cold and miserable his whole life is before they rear up again and he blacks out, wakes up about midway through the Titan, having massacred everyone there, and wondering, what is the point of this all? Where does this end?
How did I get here?
Yeah, and the nails take hold again, and the next time he wakes up, it's him severing the head of the Titan from the body, and as he falls, he just has this thought where there are no lives left on this ship except for one, and I dedicate them all to Khorne. Blood for the blood god, skulls for the skull throne, as he makes impact with the ground and dies. Like, they genuinely have some interesting thoughts that we don't get to see enough of. They have a whole faction that is basically just ascetic monks. They have given up all attacks. They argue that all misery, we're all going to die anyway, and all misery comes from you denying the basal facts of your existence. Because, oh man, this is such a cogent argument. I am not advocating for this behavior, but because I have to be the hype man.
You have to be the hype man, but there are some things that I can't hype too much.
Right? I do not condone this behavior, but they argue that underneath everything we do is this baseline current of fury. Everything we do is just cope, to hide the fact that if I was bigger and stronger than you, you wouldn't stand a chance. And the biggest pains in life come from you denying yourself this, denying yourself the freedom to go into battle, figure out who you are and figure out what you're really made of. It's the epitome of, I will not be remembered if I just sit here and do nothing, but I can leave a large enough scar that you will have to put my name in headlines.
Well, I like the philosophy. I like the philosophy because it's the same driving force behind go quit your day job where your boss is treating you like shit to, I don't know, start a band or something. Get your name in the newspaper. Somehow not a massacre, please, please. But, like, go be you and be nothing but you. Why the hell are you acting like somebody else?
I dread a Korn video. After reading... Because the approach I take for these is the most flattering angle imaginable, right? And I'm usually pretty kind to the legions, only because, again, if they're your favorite, you want them.
State mandated hype man.
And again, like I've seen 101 Ultramarine videos that just crap all over them for no good reason, right? And it's like, you know, I try and be fair, and if you watch all of them, you will see every perspective, right? Like, this is overly fair to Angron. There's plenty where I'm mean to him, right? But I deeply, deeply, deeply dread doing a Korn episode because I will have to argue for those points in the best of my ability. And
every other line is going to be, please don't massacre someone. Please don't massacre someone. Please don't massacre someone.
It reads like a manifesto sometimes. Like it reads like a manifesto sometimes. Hmm. And so it's Korn rose from being like, you know, it's not that bad. I dread Slaanesh more to like right up there with Slaanesh of like, that's going to be.
See,
how am I going to argue about that?
Slaanesh will just get
so demonetized.
Some form of strike.
Yeah. It's impossible.
Korn is like, this is a bad influence.
Mm-hmm. Because there's just enough. That's the thing that's interesting about Korn. There's just enough there to be good advice. Just enough there to be good advice. And then you just twist it.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize where that energy is being directed. It's not quit your day job. It's do something about your day job.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, please don't do something about your day job. Go do art on the side. I don't know.
Yeah. They're oddly a very philosophical legion, and I would love to dive deeper into that. I'd love to dive, obviously, because they worship Korn. They have so many units. They have so many units from the 8-bound. I couldn't cover them all. So, for sure, you're probably going to get a units video out of them, and maybe a philosophy video. But
I would love a philosophy video.
I left liking them more than I did, but dreading Korn a lot more than I did. God, I don't look forward to that episode.
I can see how it's so easy to indoctrinate people into the cult of Korn, though.
Because you
tell somebody, listen, you're only doing things for your boss and not for you. Stop living a lie. Quit your day job and go do art. Except the art is...
pick up a chain axe.
Imagine the macaroni drawings you used to do as a kid, except you're using intestines this time.
Yes, pretty much. That's the stuff Korn plays for. Yeah, so that one's going to be fun. It's going to be... Because, I mean, most of those episodes, spoiler alert, will read like I'm trying to indoctrinate you into the Chaos Cult. If you haven't noticed, that's how this one read.
A little bit.
So I don't dread Nurgle that much. I look forward to Nurgle because you will throw up.
Listen, I'm a bit partial to, as much as I hate Nurgle from a disgust perspective, I do like him from a philosophical perspective. So I'm more of like a Nurgleite. Tzeentch, I like his aesthetic, but I would never be a follower of. And Slaanesh might be fun for a day. Until things get scary.
Yeah. But that does bring an end to this episode on the World Eaters.
I like them. I like them. I agree with you. They should get more because I would love to see more of the Angron's just spitting facts. I would love to see if his kids adopted that same penchant for words as he has, but...
Ooh, I almost forgot something.
We need to see more of them.
Someone, one of them has beaten the butcher's nails.
Really?
Yes. Almost forgot about that. It's only one.
How did he do this?
We don't know. It's a one-off, pretty much. It's a one-off. So, but it is plausible, and Amrine did it, which means Angron, if he was not such a doomer,
yeah,
might have been able to do it.
I guess the message is behind there is don't be a doomer. You can figure it out.
Yeah, you can figure it out. But that will come up at a later at a later date.
Unique.
Yeah,
somebody's beaten. They no, seem pretty.
They seem very. And if I remember correctly, this is something Gilliman mentions while missing half his face. Not the person that has beaten it, but the fact that Angron is very defeatist and it's kind of all his fault, because Gilliman will not be beaten by words. That's a guarantee. You can beat, you can break my mortal coil, but you're not beating me in the marketplace of debate.
I write treatises. You scream.
Yeah, but yeah, like Angron, I really, really, really like Angron. That's without me mentioning that they have some of the best models out there, by the way, and Angron's is.
Dude, Angron's is de facto, I think, my favorite model.
I think the reason I like the Chaos Primarchs the most is because their designs are some of the most creative. Even though it does kind of boil down to Primarch with wings. Wow, it really does. Mortarion, Magnus, Angron. Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
All of the Chaos Gods saw Sanguinius and went, ugh, should have thought of that.
How did I not think of that? Nope, Fulgrim's a snake, so. I don't know if he's a winged snake, though. And we don't have a model of him, so.
We do have art, though, don't we?
We've gotten descriptions of him.
It's secondhand art. It's unofficial.
Yeah.
So, which, it's very good.
Maybe
that's
I just
not
like
to discount
Primarchs with wings, because I do like
Sanguinius.
Very
good art,
so.
But.
Yeah, that does bring an end to this episode, though. As always, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for being you.